This is Masters of Dispute Resolution on PodClips. Masters of Dispute Resolution is designed to provide those involved in the mediation process with the views of the most experienced and accomplished mediators and others experienced in the process. Through our discussions, you will gain insight into how to address and overcome difficult issues and achieve more satisfying results in mediation. Your host is Len Levy, mediator and arbitrator with ADR Services, Inc., a leading alternative dispute resolution provider. Len litigated complex cases for more than 30 years and has been a mediator since 1998 and is a member of the National Academy of Distinguished Neutrals. He has been recognized as a super lawyer in alternative dispute resolution each year since 2014. And now your host, Len Levy.
Thank you, Daryl. Welcome, everyone. And thank you for joining us on Masters of Dispute Resolution, a podcast which will add tools to your mediation toolbox. We're brought to you by the National Academy of Distinguished Neutrals and ADR Services, Inc. In each podcast episode, you will hear a story about conflict, the impact that conflict had on the lives of the parties involved, how resolution was reached, and lessons to be taken from that conflict and its resolution. Now, many details of the story you are about to hear have been modified to preserve the confidentiality essential to mediation, while also conveying the essence of the conflict and its resolution. Today, we will be discussing, life on the farm. And that is going to be in the context of a story that will be told to us by Steve Block. And Steve and I are both on the panel of ADR Services. And Steve brings an incredible background to his mediation practice. Prior to joining ADR Services, he spent 43 years as a trial lawyer and civil litigator and handled a wide variety of complex litigation. We could go into all of the things that Steve did, but if we did that, the podcast would be over. We'd have gone through three breaks. And so let's just suffice to say that Steve's extensive trial and dispute resolution experience has developed into a broad working knowledge of complex issues, and that often present themselves in ADR proceedings. He draws upon his intimate knowledge of the challenges, risks, and benefits associated with trial in order to present the parties at mediation with a realistic and also cost-effective alternatives. Sometimes those alternatives are developed by Steve. Sometimes they're presented by the parties, and Steve is able to utilize those to resolve disputes and obtain kind of even beyond just resolving like a litigation matter, help the parties reach peace. That has earned Steve the respect of counsel and clients alike and has resolved numerous disputes. Thank you, Steve, for joining us on Masters of Dispute Resolution.
I'm happy to participate, Len. Thank you.
Well, you know, you and I have been discussing this, the idea of what took place in a very, very unique, in some ways, setting. But sometimes when you have families that run a business, it may sound somewhat familiar to people, but every family has their own problems. Steve, why don't you tell us about the farmers and their family?
And, I couldn't agree more. There's no family that doesn't have ongoing issues. And these are so interesting because they're so real. They're so organic. This case is one that came to me by way of a business attorney that I've known for years. And he called and said he had this family, some of his favorite clients, who third generation grandparents purchased this farming land down near Bakersfield in 1919. Coming up to the current day, the two survivors of that family are two brothers. They're in their late 40s. They're married. They have kids. And there's, so we have cousins. And they had a very successful, really lucrative operation where they had both wholesale and retail farming. They grew and sold olives. They made port and dessert wines with a moderate-sized vineyard. And their real specialty that we probably shouldn't be eating at our age, Len, but they made just excellent traditional cured meats like linguiça and chorizo, along with some cheese. And so they had a wholesale operation where they sent these products all over the U.S. But they also had a retail, like a park, sort of like Harris Ranch was in the old days, where people coming off of I-5, they're hungry, they see, oh, my God, there's the farm, and let's go over there. And they take their kids and get a picnic, do a little port tasting and relax. So, and that's really, that's the description of what the operation was at the time of this mediation. The only thing to add to it is that everyone in this family were at each other's throats. They had it with each other after working this up for about 20 years. The two brothers had worked in it, from early ages through high school, through college, with their parents. And it was just a very, very compelling, sad, disheartening situation. I always like the emotionally driven cases because, first of all, they're very human. We get to see the best and the worst of all of us, how we live sometimes. But it also is a great opportunity, to get people on their way. And so we'll see if we did that here.
Okay. Well, Steve, when you have a multi-generational family, it sounds like there are going to be interests that the younger kids coming up are going to have interests. New wives that are brought into this are going to have interests. So what was the nature of the dispute that developed bringing them to you?
It had to do with, and you're correct, and we had three generations. As it turned out, the kids really, and we'll learn at the end when we can see how it resolved, but the cousins really were not involved. They didn't show up. They were involved in mainly helping one of the wives in the retail operation. But there was a division of work. One of the brothers was the farmer, did all the raising of the grapes, managed the olive trees and make sure they were sprayed every year so they didn't get eaten by olive flies. And he also purchased the hogs that they used in their they purchase hogs and bring out people to butcher them on site and then make up their recipes to smoke and cure chorizo and linguiça and all that. The other brother was, I would say, an operational, a little bit more maybe formal brain power, work in industry along the way off and on while always having a hand in the ranch. And so the brothers had a pretty good relationship. But what the problem was is there were little disputes that went unresolved. There were little power centers that were not agreed to. And so the cousins now were at each other's throats on schedules and assignments. And then the mothers and fathers kind of got involved. And then the fathers being the brothers would back off and assume that the wives would work it out. And they just had a big Gordian knot. And really, we all know this. We know, you really got to nip things in the bud in our own lives, I mean, I've been married 50 years. I think in my first, 10 years, I think, we don't have to talk that out right now. they come up 20 years later. So now, you hit things head on when they happen. But when you have a business that's this busy and, day and night plus a retail operation, there's not a lot of, time to have quiet time and share, what your angst is or some problems you have. They just let it go. And unfortunately, the big question at the outset was, could we fix that? Yeah. Could we help them heal and mend all of these problems and get back into the operation the way it was?
So you have a multi-million dollar, it sounds like, multi-million dollar operation. The operation on the level of financial security for the family seems to be working, but this is not something that just kind of handles itself. A lot of hard work goes into this, and people have needs to be validated. Then you're having to bring in the wives who, from what I'm hearing, weren't raised in this, so they had to become acclimated, and they bring all of their past into this. So you have a cacophony of experiences and feelings and emotions that are causing the parties to not agree. What stage had it reached at that point? Were they ready to just call it quits or what?
I was warned in the initial call from their business lawyer, who just loved this family and had known them for, 25, 30 years. And he described generally, what the wife's involvement was, and but did not know really kind of from an emotional standpoint where they were, other than to say there's high tension, there's a lot of depression, and, everybody being really disheartened, and also feeling kind of moribund. I mean, what are we going to do? I can't, I love you, honey, but I can't live with you anymore. And that kind of, that's, you hear about that's a common sort of place that people can get to. But it was a mystery going into this. So that raised some things that I needed to be mindful of as I went through. We'll be talking about, the private meetings and all that. I really had to make an effort to not just focus on the brothers, who were really the most engaged and the ones with a lifetime experience. And this is their legacy. This is their grandparents' ranch. But I made sure to get a lot of eye contact with and as much interaction as I could, elicit from the wives. So at least they knew I was listening to everybody, but they did not participate very much. I'll talk about that maybe in a little while.
Okay. So you have you have with this operation, the brothers seemingly not interacting on a day-to-day basis, or what was the nature of their interaction?
I'm not sure this, I know this, as a fact, mm-hmm. but having four sons mm-hmm. coming from a big family, I think these two guys were totally committed to the business and to each other, because they were literally and emotionally connected with the operation several generations back. I mean, their grandparents came here in 1919 mm-hmm. and got this piece of land. I think it had been expanded a little bit. The high five came into play. They weren't frivolous about it, and I think they became more quiet with each other than, mouthy and argumentative with each other. I think they both felt like, the world was on their shoulders. They're getting ready to potentially lose their identity, their history, their legacy. That was my feeling of what was going on with them.
So you also have you have a division of labor. You have the wives, did they interact on a day-to-day basis as well?
The retail operation was something they had to prepare for, at the end of each day. Restocking, where we have lots of people coming off the road. They have all these display cases. They have, coolers, et cetera. So, they engaged as much labor as they could from the kids, from the cousins. So one person was managing that retail operation. The other wife was primarily the back office person. She took orders for all the shipping, did accounts receivables and payables, but to the extent that her kids were involved in the retail operation, and to the extent that the back office was in the same building as the retail outlet, they had a lot of interaction, and it wasn't uncommon for her kids to come in mm-hmm. and lay on her how unfairly they're being treated, or, complaining about their aunt.
Some of this, I would imagine you were told by the business manager was occurring. I'm trying to distinguish between what the business manager told you going in and what you later learned in the mediation, which
yeah.
we can go in a little bit later.
He gave me a general description. He wanted me to know, and I've sort of put this out there into the mediation community, but I mean, I'm attracted to cases that have this challenge where there's a high emotional component. I just think it I think most cases are emotional, both personal injury cases and business cases. Family business cases can be the worst. So he warned me about it and just said, look, I'm calling you because I've got this family. I think so much of them. I know everything about their business. He gave me a, you know, a summary of what they're doing. He told me generally that, you know, one brother did this work and the other brother did that work. And we have the two wives. He felt that he didn't really know exactly where the wives stood, other than they clearly, based on some anecdotal information that he had, that, you know, they were ticked. They were angry. They were all stressed. But I really got the details in the private meetings I had with each brother and his wife.
Which we will be getting into.
Yes.
The other side of a break. And I'm Len Levy. I'm chatting with Steve Block. And we are on Masters of Dispute Resolution.
Masters of Dispute Resolution would like to thank ADR Services Incorporated, your partner in resolution, and its founder, Lucy Barron, for supporting this podcast. ADR Services is one of the leading providers of alternative dispute resolution in California, leveraging technology to drive resolution. ADR Services is committed to dynamism in the face of growing client need and an ever-evolving legal climate. Now operating offices in all major legal markets of California, ADR Services provides unparalleled in-person and remote resolution services through its exclusive panel, comprised of more than 130 of the most distinguished and talented neutrals across the state, capable of handling challenging and complex mediations, arbitrations, and other procedures in every field of law. When you seek the services of a neutral and you want results and satisfied clients, contact ADR Services, www.adrservices.com.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy, and I'm chatting with Steve Block, who's about to get into a mediation that he's, the basic background has been teed up just before the break. Now we're going to be talking about, how do we approach this mediation? And what was going through your mind, Steve, when you're faced with this problem? What did you do?
Well, that's a great question because we know it sort of intuitively, but I certainly realized before we went into the first meeting of any type that, you know, I needed to understand and comport my approach, knowing that this is highly emotional. I don't really know to what extent people are crossways with each other. I've got husbands and wives. There's all kinds of combinations there that might surface later, daylight later. So, you know, I think we all do this, Lynn. I'm sure you do too. I mean, I'm really mindful that, you know, if people don't trust me, if they in any way think that I'm on somebody's side or I'm going to be, you know, I'm not even-handed, you know, you're done. You don't have, you know, they aren't going to listen to you. So I usually spend some amount of time, you know, initially kind of nurturing that. And so to get to the point, what happened was I went back into my office. Everybody showed up in the lobby, everybody except the kids. So it was just the husbands and wives and the business lawyer. And I told my receptionist, I don't want to come out until everybody's there. Because, you know, typically I'll go out there and I'll start chatting with people about nothing. And then the other side comes in and goes, whoa, you started this? So I always make sure, you know, those are the little things that can really affect people.
Right.
So once I was notified they were all there, I came out and greeted them and nobody was ebullient. They were all courteous. They basically shook their hands and we introduced each other and all that. And I said, well, let's go into the conference room here. I wanted to have an initial, just a real brief housekeeping meeting with everybody.
And let me interject something here because what has become typical in, especially in California mediations, look, it's done differently in different parts of the country, but there are a lot of people, and when I say people, I mean mediators and attorneys who are a bit fearful of even having the people in the same room. But it sounds like it that you decided to start that way for
yes.
a purpose.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, we could spend an hour talking about whether to have a joint meeting initially or not. And it really and I agree with you. We don't have them as much as we used to. I've had cases where I've had to bring people in the back door and put them in a nanny room because there was actually some danger suggested by one of the lawyers in terms of anger and all that. But these people were there, you know, they really needed help. They clearly came to this and were agreeable to come to. And I got this obviously from the a little bit from the business lawyer, but I didn't have any worry about that. But in briefly talking to them about the process and what they can expect and this and that, I wanted to tell them together, which sort of starts that road where I want them to know, look, I'm here for all of you. I'm here to try to help you make decisions to settle your dispute. So just to run through it quickly, we went into the room, you know, I showed them, you know, I was actually taking information down, like who was who and this and that. And I expressed my, initially expressed my, without getting into personal stuff, I said, look, I come from a big family. I go way back and I know this is just horrible for all of you. I mean, I'm really, really, you know, sensitive to that, this is a tough situation. I know everybody's stressed and disappointed and, you know, I get that. But you're here. We have some opportunities potentially to get everybody on their way. Everything works out in the long run. Those are just axioms. I mean, it's like, yeah, it's true. It's really true. The second thing I needed to take care of in the joint meeting was to clarify and get their agreement that their lawyer that represents all of them in the business, he is not representing anybody here today against another. He's here for the good of the order. He'll be a great resource to me because he has a lot of the details of the business, you know, and the various things you all do. So, and I know him really well, and I'm just really pleased that he's here. He'll be a great help to me and to you. So I just wanted to get that out of the way so that they know that the business lawyer and I, when I go into private meetings with these groups, aren't in any way trying to, you know, take advantage of anybody. We're trying to reach consensus and get the case settled.
So you're building trust. You are also, there's one other thing you're doing. You're having a person who is a necessary participant. Sometimes we have people who are disruptive of the process, and sometimes we have people who are extremely helpful in getting something resolved. And it sounds like you made a good choice here.
Yeah, and I, you know, I'd love to take credit for, you know, all the wonderful things that happen in our practice. This business lawyer, I just got, I've known this guy for 30 years, and he's not only smart, has a real, you know, broad-based business knowledge and litigation knowledge, and he's also just a really good, kind of a throwback, a terrific lawyer, you know, ethical, and, you know, he just, you know, knows when to talk, and when he's just a wonderful guy. I couldn't ask for a better participant. And you raise a good point. Sometimes we go to these joint meetings and one of the lawyers wants to pop in and try to be a fighter pilot in front of his or her clients, and they start, you know, lighting everybody's hair on fire. This was the opposite of that. This was just a good, brief, further introduction. Told him about splitting them up. I go, now I'm going to take one of you, one group, take you down to another conference room, and then I'm going to meet with that group probably for 30 minutes, maybe even a little longer. And understand the people that are waiting, understand a couple things. You know, the restrooms are there. Here's the Wi-Fi number. If you need coffee or anything else, ask, you know, Michael. But that remember, I will be spending the same kind of time with you, and the other room will be waiting. But it's necessary because I need to hear what the story is. I need to hear what you all have been through, what your thoughts are, so I can really get, you know, get all the information. So I'd cover that with them and then pretty much just split them up.
Okay, so the attitude that they had going in, I would imagine you would get that in the next segment, but I do want to kind of paint a picture. And the picture I want to paint is these people enter this room all together. They know each other, obviously. We're talking about crossed arms and sad faces. Is that what we're talking about?
Well, there was something for everybody in the sense that, you know, there were, you know, I'm always careful about interpreting body language. I always kind of feel like the best lawyers I've met don't talk very much. And I talk a lot. So, you know, you really got to be careful when you start raising judgments. However, there was clearly tension in the entire room. It was palpable. The wives, interestingly, sort of appeared to me to be kind of sitting back and watching, like they weren't going to be interjecting. You know, they were not just chomping at the bit to get their licks in. So, you know, their head down, maybe kind of thumbing through the iPhone, looking up, you know, eye contact, I think letting me know they're listening, that type of thing. I mean, there wasn't anything really, real significant. They remained enigmas to me. Mm. I didn't know. So I just made sure I kept having good eye contact with everybody. The brothers were appropriately serious. Nobody was laughing or quipping or anything like that. I mean, they were appropriately serious, but they were really listening. They were actively listening. I think they all probably were in their own way. Mm-hmm. But their presentation at that time was consistent with what I'd been warned about. And it was really consistent about how this thing unfolded. Not that I was a soothsayer. You get a feeling about people. They get a feeling about you. And so that's how that went.
So now you've described, you've given your introduction. They're going into separate rooms. What are you picking up in the separate rooms that gave you clues as to how to approach resolution?
Yeah. From their standpoint or just both? But just the whole interaction?
The whole
It's interesting because one thing you look for that you see when you go into the private caucus or the private meeting, mm-hmm. you almost kind of get their either emotional or stated response to what happened in the joint meeting. Mm-hmm. So, one thing I noticed in both rooms, I can say both of the brothers were, kind of presented themselves both in leaning in and kind of, responding to whatever I was saying. I mean, they were actively engaged. I think they were serious mm-hmm. about getting through this laborious, somewhat to them maybe excoriating process mm-hmm. of having to talk about all this stuff. But it was more relaxed. And I reinforced when I went at each of these rooms, I reinforced with them and said, look it, I know this is stressful. I know this is, what all the emotions that you would describe. But I'm telling you, as much as you can, try to relax. Don't be stressed because you're here. Don't let me cause you any stress. No decision is going to be made without you all signing on. And I don't want you to get stressed from this process mm-hmm. itself. And I said, the other thing is, if you are feeling stressful, if I say something or I'm doing something and you're thinking, well, I don't get that. I don't understand that. Mm-hmm. What's he doing? Mm-hmm. I want you to grab me by my cheeks mm-hmm. and say, what are you doing? Preferably mention it to the business lawyer and we'll all talk about it together.
Right.
But the point was, you let them know, look, I'm here to help. We're going to do this together. And we get started. So I felt really good about the initial private meetings, the outset right. of them.
At some point, you're figuring out, there may be, you referred earlier to cutting the Gordian knot. And cutting the Gordian knot means, to me, the finding the solution that cuts through it all. I know the background story of that.
Well, it's actually untied.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You untie it, which is like impossible for...
Right. So it seems to me, just from my view, hearing what you've said, that there's a problem-solving approach that needs to be taken here.
Yes.
And that problem-solving approach, how did it present to you? How did you view that?
Yeah. Well, I let them, and I listened and took notes and let them just tell their story. Mm-hmm. I didn't interrupt them, hardly at all. Maybe I had mm-hmm. a couple follow-up questions at the end. And... that's helpful for a lot of reasons. It's good for any of us to get things off our chest. Sometimes you say things and you think after you said them, well, I'm not sure that was really that big of a deal. But so there was some period of time they just unloaded everything. And then you get to the point. I got to the point in these first meetings where I said, well, have you had any discussions about what you want to do? I mean, can you envision us, making a list of all of these problems and setting up some good working ground rules and ways we can move forward? And in both rooms, they were absolutely, because I didn't want to lose opportunities mm-hmm. that they might have. It was pretty clear they were done. And so with that, getting back to your question, they didn't have a lot of options. They had talked about partitioning this property, giving the property, you know, per partition order and all that, and letting a third party get everything appraised and, you know, do everything that a partition referee does and partition it. And then the other solution would be is if one side wanted to buy out the other side. So at least this legacy would remain. So we talked a lot about how bad an idea partition was, that they have no control, et cetera, et cetera. And so I didn't, when I mentioned the notion of selling, you know, buying or selling, I just threw it out and said, have you talked about that at all? I mean, I don't know if that's something that's you feel might be an option. And they initially, they were all, well, you know, we don't know the value, and they didn't want to have to go through that. And I think, you know, they were worried about the negotiations. You know, I didn't say anything to him at that time, like, okay, let him tell you what it's worth, and then you tell him whether you want to buy or sell, which is a way to get a good, honest number. We didn't get to that till later.
Okay. You've discussed solutions. You've discussed options on how to proceed. We're going to try to talk about what the possible solutions were and how they worked out. And then in our next segment, we're going to be talking about what you can learn by what Steve is about to describe. And so we're going to take a break. I'm Len Levy. We're talking with Steve Block on Masters of Dispute Resolution.
Masters of Dispute Resolution is sponsored by the National Academy of Distinguished Neutrals. NADN is the premier invitation-only association of civil mediators and arbitrators in the United States, with members in every state of the nation. Only experienced ADR professionals who are widely acceptable to local plaintiff and defense firms are invited to join the Academy's roster. The Academy's website, NADN.org, is the most widely visited neutrals database in the world today, with over 40,000 law offices, insurance companies, and corporations visiting our free website annually. Firms can search for neutrals by many criteria, including location, case expertise, qualifications, language skills, and most NADN members also publish their available dates, calendars, online, making NADN.org the go-to website for law firms wishing to schedule appointments online with their preferred mediators. For more information, please visit www.nadn.org today.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. And we are just on the edge of our seats as we are waiting to hear what the solutions were that Steve Block was able to discuss with the parties and how that resulted in an agreement. Steve?
Well, as we left off really identifying, they had only three options. The one option was not to do anything other than try to shake hands, get maybe some working agreements on how they'd move forward and eliminate a lot of these problems that had led to this breakdown. That wasn't going to happen. It was real clear. So that left really two solutions. One would be one party or the other could get a partition referee appointed and have a partition referee sell the property. And that would, and we talked at some length with them about the fact they lose control as much as they would have otherwise if they have a third party doing it. It's really expensive. They'd have to have appraisals. They're talking about real property, the dwellings, the working barns and smokehouse, and, you know, UCC filings, and, you know, it's just a mess. So that left possible consideration of a buyout, where if one of the brothers said, yeah, okay, I for the right price, I'll withdraw from ownership at all, or ownership or possession or residence on the property, and I'll move on. And so, you know, that took maybe two or three additional back and forth meetings with greater participation now of the business lawyer going through both of us, but the business lawyer explaining, you know, what a buy-sell agreement generally would look like. And it's a practical matter, you know, how could that be designed in a way that the group that was going to purchase the brother that's withdrawing, you know, how they could finance that. I mean, we don't have that kind of money laying around.
Right. And this is, just to give context, this is not taking place in one day.
No, it's 2 days.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, 2 days. And so we talked about that quite a bit on that. At the end of the first day, it was agreed that we'd come back tomorrow morning and they'd go back and think about the day. And I told them, I said, and by the way, somebody gave me advice a long, long time ago. Don't talk about this on the way home in the car. I think we've made a lot of progress today. And before you know it, we've got ourselves all tangled up again. Go home and, you know, have a glass of wine or a Coke and, you know, have some chorizo or, you know, linguiça, whatever you want to do. But don't talk about this, especially between spouses, because we will invariably, you know, cause some damage as to how far we got up the mountain. And
so they drove in one car?
Separate cars. Oh, but okay. Even, you know, I mean, you can imagine on the way home, the wives were fairly quiet during the day. Uh-huh. You can see on the way home, it's like, by the way, you know, and private session number four, you know. So, you know, and I just, you know, kind of encouraged them in a positive way. I said, it's been a great day. I think we've got a lot done. And they were going to go home and think about this concept of, you know, would they want to be the person to, or the side to buy or to sell if we could reach an agreement, and you know, the terms that would make that possible. So the aha moment, which I take no credit for, by the way, it really was a group. You couldn't have asked for a more compelling situation. Smart people and flexible, and their business lawyer. You know, I just give credit where credit's due. They came back the next morning. The business lawyer pulled me into my, he came into my office and he said, I think, you know, Mike, who would make up a name here, but I think Mike would like to sell. And, it, you know, still, like I say, I saw, you know, a light came down and, you know. So anyway, and then that took a couple of meetings. You know, when somebody makes a decision, sometimes the people that didn't opt for that decision start looking around like, should we have said that? Maybe we want to sell. And again, another blessing on this case is that the brother that wanted to buy his brother out and keep this operation, he was like so into what he does. He loved, you know, he loved making chorizo. He loved growing the port wine grapes. And I mean, he really looked forward to the opportunity, not to necessarily be away from his brother, but continue working this family ranch. Now with the flexibility, perhaps, to make adjustments, it'll, you know, make everybody happy. It was an outstanding turn of events. And then we had a lot of discussions about, okay, how are we going to arrive at value? What about competition? We had to have kind of a non-competition, had to be carefully worded. You know, California's got some strange law on what's illegal and not, but this could be a contractual purchase and sale. So we went through all those details, worked through the numbers over the next couple of hours with their business lawyer there and the two brothers there. You know, they ended up coming up with a round price. I've forgotten what the buyout, you know, what the terms were, but I think they had all done well enough where the person that was selling, he didn't have to have a big front load on it. You know, and without going into the details, just, you know, he had another operation that involved agriculture, involved growing, distilling, whatever. He had something in his secret heart, in the secret recesses of his mind, had thought about for years that he'd like to do, almost avocationally.
Wow. Let me ask you this. Let me just interject. The concept of what was life going to be like for each of them was discussed and thought through so that each of them knew on a going forward basis, like, for example, the one leaving the farm wasn't going to leave a void that could not be filled and basically submarine the operation.
No, not at all. And in fact, it was, well, sort of funny, who was the real expert, you know, in making chorizo or linguiça? And, you know, one of them had all this experience and knowledge, and the other guy was going, yeah, it's not that big of a deal.
Okay.
You know, so, I mean, and then of course, the other thing was, there was a discussion about, well, look, I'm going to have my own new operation. Told him what it was going to be so that the selling party wasn't uptight. Said, you know, I'd really like to have that John Deere, that little John Deere tractor with the front loader. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, you know, and I'd like to take one of those vehicles. I mean, they had enough. It was such a well-run operation. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't on a string. You know, I mean, they really had really good equipment, everything else. He was going to be able to take some of those items. They were all listed. Mm-hmm. There was timing involved. There were terms as when payments would be made.
Okay.
The property was relatively unencumbered. You know, it had been owned by the family for so long. They had some small, you know, mortgages on perhaps one of the barns, the newer barns. So, you know, they had a lot of things came together. They had the resources. Mm-hmm. They had the personnel themselves, mm-hmm, and their kids.
Right.
And they all had really good ideas, and they were proven to be doers.
Right.
Accomplished people. Mm-hmm. You know, the only people that work harder in agriculture that I know of than these people are dairy farmers. Mm-hmm. People have no idea. It's, you know, 3 a.m. till 9 p.m.
Right.
So they were a really neat group. It was a great story, mm-hmm, brought taste and texture from the homeland, and ended up not blowing this thing up.
Well, the attitude walking out must have been very gratifying to you as a mediator.
Yeah, it's funny, Lynn, as you know. I mean, mm-hmm, we work hard to, you know, we read all the current different ways of handling things and handling people. And I mean, I think as practicing lawyers, we're sort of preparing for that our whole career. I mean, I had clients that were really emotional that I had to establish trust with, and, you know, we're talking to juries. And so, I mean, we're, you know, I don't think any of us mediators claim to be oracles, mm-hmm, you know, like Johnny Carson with the Carmack thing or whatever he used to do. I mean,
right.
So yes, I got great satisfaction out of it. Mm-hmm. With most mediations, things come together not just because of me. They come together because of the circumstances in the cases. Mm-hmm. Some of them settle with people more pleased than others. Some people go away, you know, not pleased at all. I can't control that. I just do the best I can. But this was particularly gratifying because they really were really accomplished, really neat people. And at the very end, the two brothers, is just before everybody walks out the door, the two brothers just kind of, you know, one put his hand out, the other one, you know, give me a hug. I mean, they gave each other a good brotherly hug, you know? And yes, I mean, it made me happy, not because I mediated the case, but it was like, wow, what a story, you know?
Well,
this is awesome.
Yeah, the satisfaction I think we as mediators bring, the greatest satisfaction, is not basically patting ourselves on the back that we did something special. It's that we helped people put the things that were adding stress to their life behind them.
Yes.
And so I don't generally walk away from mediations, and you don't walk away from mediations with the idea of, look what I did for them.
Right.
It was look what was able to be accomplished overall, and I'm glad I was in a position to help.
Yeah. And I'm sure you agree in your experience, Lynn, if both sides in the case, at mm-hmm, the end of the case, mm-hmm, shake your hand and say, thank you so much. Or if one of the lawyers kind of looks back and says, you really did a nice job. I mean, that's everything.
Right.
You know, I mean, so.
The other thing, you know, in terms of parties being able to shake at each other's hand in that way, that is what we kind of shoot for. That doesn't always happen. Sometimes they're satisfied with the idea of, okay, at least that lawsuit's done. This is a much different kind of situation. One of the things that you said that was particularly important was that the results were reflective of what the parties really wanted. At least may I suggest, see if you agree, if attorneys take the idea of what does my client really want and need out of this into a mediation and work toward doing that as opposed to winning arguments, the results are going to be better. The clients, I think, are going to be satisfied more.
Yeah. I think that happens. It's a matter of personality and probably training and mentoring and, you know, who you've been hanging out with. But, I mean, the lawyers that feel like or project an image that they're going to, through argument, convince me that I should go in the other room and hammer the other people into submission until they settle, they aren't effective. And, you know, some of the best trial lawyers that I know, when they mediate, which isn't very often, they don't come in and try to win the case. They come in and they're protagonist. They're an antagonist to the process. Mm-hmm. I think that the best results come from lawyers who are not afraid in a private discussion with a mediator to say, hey, look, I know I've got problems in this particular issue. I get it. And we're going to be willing to, you know, we're going to adjust what we expect based on that. However, I have a way I'm going to handle it at trial. You could just tell them this is what I think we're going to do. You know, there's no reason to be antagonistic. When both lawyers get involved as protagonists, cases settle much more often, and I think their clients are happier, you know, anecdotally speaking.
We have a very interesting profession that we are in. Both of us come from the trial lawyer aspect of the profession. And that's not always the case, by the way, for mediators. But when you come from that profession, one of the things that I hope people will understand is that furthering the interests of the client is the primary thing we are trying to do, not just in mediation, but in trial. And very often, trial is going to give the clients what they need, I think, in more cases, because trial has an imposed result that doesn't really take into account what the party's interests are. It's going to be less satisfying than a result the parties agreed to.
If possible. We always say some cases have to be tried, but there's a footnote, you know, really?
Right, exactly. Well, thank you. We're out of time, unfortunately, and this has been a lot of fun. I really have enjoyed this chat and hearing the story. And I hope that, Steve, I hope I can have you back as a guest in the future. This is great.
Love to.
Well, so if people want to contact you to schedule a mediation, what's the best way of doing that?
Just call ADR Services, any one of their offices. I'm in Sacramento. I do a lot of work in the Bay Area. I'm willing to go, you know, I'm pretty much willing to go where they need me. I'll drive. I mean, I'm in the Valley, Central Valley. It's a little bit different cadence and practicalities than if you're in, you know, Alameda or Oakland or Long Beach.
Right.
But they can call any ADR service, and I'm really attached to the Oakland office of ADR.
Okay, well, thank you. And thank you, Daryl Wayne, my engineer and producer. I'm your host, Len Levy, and this is Masters of Dispute Resolution on podclips.io, powered by Infigen Labs, Inc. I hope you will continue to enjoy the stories we bring you. And in the meantime, stay well, keep listening, and remember, peace of mind is enhanced when conflicts are resolved.
If you wish to contact Len Levy, you can reach him through his email at lslevy@adrservices.com, through Len's website, lenlevymediate.com, telephone him at 818-903-5562, or contact his case manager at ADR Services, 213-683-1600.